Good afternoon. How are you today? All right. Thank you for staying and choosing this session. I'm Carol Huber. I'm going to talk to you about our Medicaid 1115 waiver that's taking place in Texas. I don't have any conflicts to disclose except for that I work for the University Health System. So the 1115 waiver in Texas, and I think after we heard Chris's presentation, you'll understand if you haven't already that you've seen one 1115 waiver, you've seen one 1115 waiver. So raise your hand if you've had some experience, if you're familiar with 1115 waivers, and particularly DSRIP. It's good to know sort of the status of the audience. So in Texas, it's a five-year waiver. It's we just started year five, and so we're anxious to hopefully see a renewal come through. There are two incentive programs, one that reimburses hospitals for uncompensated care, and the other that is really trying to provide a delivery system reform and transformation. Eligible providers include hospitals, community mental health centers, physician practices affiliated with medical schools, and the local public health districts. So we are rounding up our five-year. An application has been resubmitted to CMS. We just found out today that California, their waiver expires on Saturday, and they just got their renewal. So we're hoping that we might get a little bit more advance notice than that, but we're anxious to see the outcome of those negotiations. So here's a look at the two pools. The UC pool is the one that's kind of reimbursing hospitals for the uncompensated care. As you know, in Texas, they opted not to expand Medicaid, so we anticipate to continue to see a lot of uncompensated care and uninsured individuals. So one thing that makes our Medicaid waiver very unique is that we're actually serving a lot of uninsured. It's not just limited to the Medicaid population. And so this is Texas. Texas was split up into 20 regional healthcare partnerships, which is also unique to the Texas waiver. I'm going to talk about Region 6. I think we all realize that Texas is a big state. My region is 20 counties. It represents about 10% of the state of Texas. And so if you take my 20 counties and overlay them here, you'll see that we actually are bigger than Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island combined. So when I get tired at the end of the day, I look at that and remind myself that we're trying to do a lot of good work in a very short amount of time. One of the first things we had to do within our regions was a community health assessment, and so that's what we did. You can see all the red reflecting how many of our counties are mental health provider shortage areas. It looks very similar when we take a look at primary care, but you can see some of the demographics that we collected. And when we look at our region, it compares pretty consistently with the state, with the exception of a few measures here and there. But what's really unique is the fact that each of these counties, there is great diversity. So one, the county of Bexar, which is where San Antonio is located, really drives most of the regional demographics because of the population size. But some of these smaller rural counties are very unique. Some are, you know, higher income, some are very poor, some have very older populations, some very young. And so it's interesting, as we developed our region, that we took a very decentralized approach. And we let, the county as far west as Del Rio that's touching the Mexico border develop the plans and the processes and the programs that they thought were most appropriate for their communities. As we developed our community health assessment, we identified the key community needs, and each region could name as many as they wanted to. We chose to keep it simple and identified six, again, to kind of have these high-level overviews of community needs. And you can see those listed here, and then each project that was proposed through this district program had to identify and connect with which community need that it was being it was addressing. So DSRIP is a fairly complicated program, but in it was built a pretty nice system of program evaluation to make sure that the work that's being done is going to accomplish the outcomes that we have in mind. So each project has both process and outcome measures. It's things like build a clinic, write a strategic plan, and then serve patients. How many patients, how many encounters are you going to provide? These are all pay-for-performance, all or nothing. So if they had a goal of 100 patients and they only serve 99, they do not earn the incentive. They do, however, have a year to carry forward. And then we have what's called Category 3 outcome targets. This is where we really take a look at, are we improving breast screening for mammograms? Are we reducing readmission rates or ER visits for ambulatory-sensitive conditions? And those we are allowing partial payment. And then we have another category that's primarily for hospitals and allows for reporting against some key quality measures. I've taken all of the measures that are associated with each of these projects and followed the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's model of the triple aim and connected to see which of the projects are addressing which components of the triple aim. And so you can kind of see this Venn diagram here where 46 of the projects are only really addressing experience of care, whether it be access to care or patient satisfaction. And then we start to see some overlap, but really only one of the projects was technically addressing all three through their milestones, which are being reported to HHSC. Now, it doesn't mean they're not addressing the other ones. They're just not part of the key listed milestones and metrics that have incentives attached to them through their program. On our website, and you can see the link up there, is a pretty neat interactive tool where you can go through all of our projects and sort them by county or by project focus or outcome measure. And this has proven to be a very useful tool. Our RHP plan that we submitted at the beginning of the waiver was 1,800 pages long. It's a huge, thick binder. And so you can imagine it's very difficult for people to navigate that and to know what's taking place either in their county or through their community partnerships or health, you know, stakeholders who are curious about how these taxpayer funds are being spent. So it's been a really neat, useful tool for them. Okay, so I always pause here and think, wow, when I describe the waiver, it sounds sort of like it looks like this. In reality, it looked a little bit more like that. Some have described the waiver as building an airplane while it's taking off. I've never built an airplane, but I have two children, and I've decided it's a lot more like childbirth. It's incredibly painful, but once you look at your child, the fog has lifted, you catch up on some sleep, you think, let's do that again. Let's have another one. And so that's where we are today, is asking CMS for a renewal of our waiver, hoping for 5 years. I'm not sure exactly what we'll get, but we feel like we've spent so much time and effort building the infrastructure, and we finally know what we're doing, that we'd like to continue on that so we can truly see the outcomes of these projects. And that's kind of the general theme of the waiver in Texas. You'll hear many of my counterparts and anchors around the state, begging our providers to keep calm and hang in there. Twice a year, every provider who has a project has to report on successes and challenges, lessons learned. And I'm always shocked that no matter how many projects, how many different types of providers or different types of projects, they similarly report these challenges and lessons learned. Planning coordination is very difficult. They have a hard time retaining staff. And you can see the others there. But the biggest one we hear all the time on lessons learned is the importance of collaboration. That they said, wow, I'm a hospital in this county. I had no idea who the community mental health center was in my county. And so now they've developed these relationships, not only with other district providers, but with other community-based organizations throughout the community or across counties. And it's been really, really, really helpful. I was at the LBJ Library over spring break and found this quote I thought was really telling. There are no problems which we cannot solve together, and very few which any of us can settle by himself or herself. So we take this sort of as a theme in our region as we work collectively on learning collaboratives and other opportunities. So what exactly is transformation? I serve on the Clinical Champions Work Group at the state level, trying to really evaluate the waiver beyond just these basic metrics that are coming in, because they're all so unique and it's hard to aggregate them into a meaningful message. But one thing we're definitely looking at are just the types of projects. And you can see here that 30% of our projects are geared towards behavioral health, which has been a real boon to our state because Texas has the lowest per capita spending on behavioral health in the country. And so some of the other projects relate to primary care and specialty care. We see a lot of things on community health workers, patient navigation, telemedicine, teleaudiology. We have dental programs, we have school-based clinics, just a huge variety of things. And so I encourage you, again, to go to our interactive tool and you can take a look at some of these projects and themes that are being implemented and understand that they're really driven by the needs of the individual community and providers, patient population. But another key part of transformation isn't the projects themselves, but as I mentioned, the collaborations that are taking place. And we had sort of a requirement to do these learning collaborative events. And they all started off sort of as meet and greet and get to know each other. We even had fun, speed dating for Disrupt. We called it the Disrupt Dash, where people could get to know each other and identify, the projects that are working on. But it quickly became more than that. And we said, okay, well, we need to know, how can I refer patients to you? How do I know what types of financial payments you make or accommodations that you have? And then we moved beyond that and said, how can we address core challenges, regardless of what my project is? You know, we all have a problem retaining staff. How can we work on that? We all have a problem meeting the mental health needs of our patients. How can we work on that? And so one of the key ones is readmissions. And I'll talk about that learning collaborative in a second. And that's where we really see that common aim of how can we go beyond just talking about some of the challenges, but really working together to solve a problem. One of our learning collaboratives, this is the fun one, is on the DISRUPT road trip. We quickly realized that while it's nice to get together in a conference room similar to this, it's much more meaningful when we can go on site and see the program in action. A lot of times when we come to a central location, we don't get to hear or from the frontline workers who really have the passion and the knowledge and the day-to-day contact with the patient and the community member. So this is a way to get out into the community and do that. Our Behavioral Health Learning Collaborative partnered with a mental health consortium in the county who's working to map and document the system of care so that when someone needs services, they know exactly where to go and what service is available to them. So we're working on that, as well as coming up with that actionable list of district projects related to behavioral health. On our website, we have kind of a PDF sort of catalog as well as a filterable Excel file, so you can easily sort by, you know, adolescent programs for substance abuse and get to those information. We do have a diabetes collaborative. This one's run by our local health department. They have a new grant from PHF and Robert Wood Johnson, and so we're tagging on with that because we do have quite a few programs and projects focused on diabetes. And then this is our readmissions learning collaborative. It's based on the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's Breakthrough Series collaborative model. So we had three face-to-face learning sessions intermixed with some web-based learning calls, and we had 10 hospitals participate, and I've got some data here in a few slides. So the big question was, well, are they really making a difference? We've got these great projects, and most people are meeting their milestones, but is it making a difference? Are we impacting some of these outcomes? And the next pieces of data I want to show you, we understand there's quite a bit of a time lag. So what we see here isn't necessarily reflective of the district projects, but it's something that we know we can continue to watch over time and see if there's going to be a change in the positive direction. So for one, for primary care health provider shortage areas, we've already seen three counties be removed from that list. So we see that as something in the positive direction. Unfortunately, dental has added one of our counties to that list. And for quality of care, when we started our RHP plan submission, Texas was ranked last in quality of care. We've moved up a few spots. We're still pretty low at 49, but that's what I like to say is directionally accurate. We have the county health rankings to go by, and we have seen more counties fall into the lower half of Texas counties in terms of outcomes. We were at 4, now 6. But what I think is more interesting is when we look at the health factors, the things that are, you know, your leading measures driving you to the outcomes, we're seeing more and more providers moving up into the higher ranked, better performing counties. And so we think that's a really positive trend, and we're anxious to see if that continues and if there will be an ultimate impact then on the outcomes. In terms of readmissions, our region ranked the lowest in Texas, the worst in terms of readmissions. When we start thinking about $18 million in potentially preventable readmissions expenditures, it gets a lot of attention of the hospitals. And we also recommend that it takes a village to address readmissions. It's not just a hospital problem. So when we had our readmissions learning collaborative, we had participation from the mental health centers, from the health department, and different organizations around the community who could take and play a role in that. One of the first things we did was an assessment. We used identified, you know, the top 10 evidence-based strategies for reducing readmissions, and we asked the hospitals where you were in that process. And so we could see there was quite a gap between where they were and where they should be, and those were the themes that we focused on during our readmissions collaborative. And then we were able to do these PDSA cycles, and you can see here some of the strategies that were either tested or implemented during the readmissions collaborative work. And this is some self-reported data we have on that learning collaborative activity. Each set of bars represents a hospital. The blue represents sort of their baseline data, probably from the initial month we started the collaborative. And then the red is the time between the start and the end of the collaborative, and the green was their last data point. So I know these data aren't perfect, and we need to go back and do some more evaluation of them, but we're thrilled with the results that we were seeing, that this ongoing discussion and collaboration was having a definite impact on readmissions rates. In terms of outcomes, again, I mentioned we report twice a year, in April and October. In April, these were some of the first set of Category 3 outcomes that were reported. So 22 out of the 31 or so were fully achieved, and those are listed in the bullets there. So we're starting to see some good results from the waiver. And you can see here under the QPI, that's quantifiable patient impact. That's number of patients served or encounters provided, that we are very much exceeding our targets through those initiatives. So what's next? Our learning collaboratives will continue. Our theme for year 5 and beyond is ACEs, where we're going to try to talk more about alignment, collaboration, evaluation, and sustainability, because we know that even if CMS approves a waiver for another 3, 4, or 5 years, it's probably going to go away after that, and we don't want these projects to go away. They're doing great work. It's building good infrastructure. Patients are being served and meeting, getting their needs met, and we want to find ways to continue those initiatives. And most interesting, I think, will be this idea of a shared performance bonus pool that's been proposed, and how we as a 20-county region and then the state will come together to identify the best metrics and the best strategies in order to address those and hit those targets. So here's my contact information. I'd be happy to meet with any of you afterwards if you have questions, and I direct you to our website and to the state's website. If you do have more questions about the waiver, and if you know anyone at CMS, tell them that they should give us another 5 years. We'd appreciate it a lot. All right, thank you.